Welcome to another edition of Students Era Podcast. Today's edition, we have Aya Solomon. Aya, thank you for joining us.
Hello. Hey, Jacob. I'm really glad I'm here.
Well, we're glad that you're here as well. Can you start by letting the audience know a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am a student. I'm a senior student at the American University of Sharjah. And I've been in the American University of Sharjah for 5 years and a half now. I did 2 years of engineering and then I switched majors, and I'm currently an English major with a minor in music and, you know, concentration linguistics. That's really my, you know, my forte.
Okay. Well, I mean, just the two areas that seem, you know, very different as far as like, you know, really technical with engineering, but I'm sure studying language has its own technicalities. Can you talk a little bit about what drove your decision to switch into being an English major?
Well, you know, I come from, you know, your good old, you know, Middle Eastern family, you know, background. You know, I've always been a studious, very studious. I love learning in general. And, you know, my parents made the decision to steer that into, becoming an engineer, since you got enough good grades to get you into the school, so you might as well, you know. And so I decided to go along with my family's decision for like a year and a half or so, and then I wasn't doing very well, you know. I was flunking half of my classes, and I felt like this isn't me, you know, like this isn't what I'm made to do, you know. And I found my calling while I was doing writing courses at the American University of Sharjah. There's spectacular professors there that, you know, who really guided me through really like enhancing my writing. And as I went through one course and the other, I felt like, okay, I was doing really bad at all the other courses. And then there was just like A's in writing. And I found my calling through that, you know. I was like, there's something wrong. So I talked to my advisor and I told her, I was like, we got to sit down with the family. we got to tell them this isn't working for me. And yeah, we sat down. I called my family over. They live in Saudi, by the way. So they had to travel to the UAE, sat down with my advisor, and she gave them, you know, the whole tea. They're like, she's like, you know, your daughter was made to do something different. This isn't her calling. And so, yeah, I mean, they believed in her words and they believed in my talent. And that's how I switched majors.
Right. So then did you grow up prior to university life? Did you grow up in Saudi?
Yes. So I'm actually Egyptian. I was born in Kuwait, raised in Saudi, Riyadh to be very specific. And then I moved to Sharjah, UAE. Growing up in Riyadh was such a such a humbling experience, honestly, because it's a very communal country, I would say. Everyone does everything together. It's very family oriented, and it really emphasizes the family and the importance of family in one's life. And I feel like that's still within me to this day, yeah.
Of course. Now, when the decision came up to study, I mean, at AUS, which is pretty, you know, a prestigious university and has a reputation of being very academically challenging. Do you remember that feeling? Like, I mean, first of all, you know, relocating to, you know, a different country and studying as well. But can you give us some insight into like what was going on in your mind like during then?
Cultural shock for sure, you know, being raised in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia for 12 years, you know, you get gender segregation and pretty much everything, you know, you get there's just a very different way of comprehending society around you when it comes to Saudi Arabia. But when I moved to the UAE, it was a whole cultural shock for me. Now, I've traveled around several times. When I was in Saudi, I've went to South Korea, I've been to Malaysia, Singapore, Japan. But then when I went to the UAE, there's this, how do I say this? Especially AUS now, you're talking about such a diverse community of people. We're talking so many nationalities together in one place, and they tolerate and accept each other, you know? Which for me, that was very foreign, you know? Because it's either I was a foreigner in a foreign country, or someone was a foreigner in Saudi, you know? Ironically, when I'm actually not even Saudi myself. But yeah, like, being in such a diverse community, it was just refreshing seeing tolerance, which is something that I still, you know, like I hold very dear to who I am today, and it's part of my identity to tolerate, if not accept, but at least tolerate other people with different opinions and different backgrounds and different religions. And that's not very easy to accommodate to at the beginning, you know, because you get a whole lot of shocks, like, oh, this person does this, or oh, this person believes in that. But then that's what the UAE really is about. It's about the tolerance, about the acceptance. And AUS is like the epitome of the epitome of acceptance and tolerance, I would say. You know, it's the perfect place to practice that because of the multinational aspect of the university, for sure.
right. Okay, so you transitioned, so just moving back to the present, so you transitioned from engineering into English. Do you remember mm-hmm. how, like, some of your first coursework went?
When I was an English major?
Yes.
My first English course was about, ironically enough, it was about women's studies. And I mean, right now, I've published papers about music, language, and gender. And this is like literally what I'm really interested in and what I publish work on. But my first like English course was women's studies. And our professor was a literature professor, one of the best, Dr. Nawal, one of the best. And I remember she told me the first time I gave her a paper, she's like, if you keep writing this way, you will not make it. So I'm telling you, I am the best representative of an underdog, okay? A person that has been told over and over again that they can't do it. You know, they can't do it. This isn't good for you. You're just not good enough. And you know what really, I was just resilient, you know, I was just persistent because I love what I do. And I just kept persisting on trying to make myself a better writer because I had the ideas. I just didn't know how to articulate them. And it took me so long for me to actually, I mean, by so long, I mean, I had to write like 10 different papers, and by the 10th paper, Dr. Noir gave me her approval. I didn't know she was one of the strictest professors, but one of the best professors that I look up to today. And her guidance was what made me who I am today, honestly. You know, and I've taken many, many more courses with her, and I'm so thankful for such an experience. But yeah, her guidance was what really pushed me through, you know? Tough love, that's what they call it.
Right. I think you touched on something important that when you have ideas and not always knowing the right way to articulate them, mm-hmm. is that kind of what drew you to music? I mean, it's just like another medium that stands for, you know, people getting out their feelings and emotions. Can you talk a little bit about how your passion for music began and deciding to study it, you know,
about the exposure of I've always been interested in music, mind you. Like, even when I was in Saudi Arabia, I was always into K-pop before it was a phenomenon. I was into Japanese rock. I was into Italian and music and French music. And it's just this global, you know, like approach to music, you know, and thinking of music in a global perspective, because I loved languages and I loved music. When I moved to the UAE, I got to personally meet up with a lot of students that were also musicians, that were also, you know, that played the violin or the ukulele or the guitar, you know, and I was very fascinated. And this is when I started, you know, I started joining the AUS choir just out of curiosity. I just signed up my name. I was like, you know, might as well. And that's where it started. AUS choir, women's choir AUS, and picking up, just randomly going on Amazon and deciding that I'm going to buy a ukulele and teach myself how to play. And I did. And then I bought a violin and I taught myself how to play. And this is my start, my journey. And then I tried, there's this very delicate dance, I would say, between language and music. And they feed onto each other, you know? Language lives within music and music lives within language. And the articulation of how a person feels can come through lyrics, it can come through notations and music, and it can come through melody. But the best kind is when you can combine both, I would say. This is my personal opinion. If you can combine both language and music and turn it into this song about expression, you know, this is the epitome of what humanity could produce, I would say. Self-expression in that source is just absolutely beautiful. And this is why I'm very much interested in this in music and song and lyrics and language. So, yeah.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. So you said that you got into the choir club just on a hope, just like, okay, let me try it out. What was there, yeah, anything else? Any other clubs that you tried out just out of curiosity? Because it seemed like that worked out really well for you.
Yeah, that worked out really well for me. I feel like this is the best advice I would give anyone that's starting off university. Try everything, you know? Try everything and see what calls you in, you know, just, you know, lures you in. There's gotta be something, you know, there's gotta be something out there that really lures you in. And it's a trial and error thing, you know. No one gets it right straight up, you know, or the very lucky minority of us does, but most of us go on to fail and succeed and fail and succeed and fail again, you know, and then finding their passion. And through that passion, there is failure and success as well. So it's an up and down cycle. It's not a straight up line, you know, line. It's kind of squiggly and up and down and all that good stuff. And so I've tried other stuff as well, like photography. I've tried joining the Korean club just as a member, you know. I tried being in the I was doing like content creation for petroleum, for the American Society of Petroleum Engineers when I was an engineer, but I was really just interested in the media aspect of it, you know, creating content creation. So I emphasized on that. But my calling definitely was with music and language. This was it for me.
Right. I think I mean you spoke on it really eloquently, just about, you know, the foundation of both is just the use of expression. And maybe the only difference that I could see, and maybe you could speak on more, is the translation part. I mean, like with music, you can obviously, well, if it has lyrics to it, you can translate it from different lyrics, but then there are certain subtleties that you can't really get into, versus English, mm-hmm. where if you're translating from English to Arabic, then it's more in like a textual or like academic sense, then it's like something completely different. What's your theory on like translation, and how does that play into everything?
Well, I would say music and language are carriers of culture, you know, whether we like it or we don't. Now we're touching on things like, when it comes to English as a language has become such a global phenomena. It is the, like, just the reason why globalization was such a successful thing is because there was an overriding language that overtook and became homogenous to all the other languages. We are taught in schools English since we are children, whether we are in the Middle East, Africa, or whatnot, you know, or Europe, you are taught English at schools, and that is a process of globalization. Music has the same process. It is a process of globalization. And even though we have different scales and even though we have different tongues, that they are not strict structures. Music and language are not strict structures. So that's something I would disagree on. You know, I would say they're so malleable. They're both so malleable that even though they carry culture, they can also carry a bigger message to the world, a bigger message of globalization, a bigger message of kind of a mini global village in a song, you know? So you would say, you would hear today things like dubstep and with Arabic musical scales, or you would hear Arabic musicians singing on Western scales. And that would be completely fine. And that is a process of globalization. It's the process of having this mini global villages that we created in our songs, in our music, and in our language as well, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So how do you, I mean, as someone who is, like you mentioned, like been a fan of Korean music and K-pop and Jay before it was cool.
Just yeah, to let everyone know.
when actually traveling to these places or interacting with people that, you know, come from the cultures that make this type of music, how do you ride that line between like, okay, I'm obviously interested, I'm aware of some of the things that your culture has produced, but I understand this isn't the end all be with all, because I understand that sometimes there's a level of wanting to relate to cultures, and then there's a level of overstepping by being like, I listen to this, so I know, you know, I think I know what you guys are. How do you navigate that, or like just the empathy that comes with that?
Yeah, I mean, cultural appropriation is a very sensitive topic, and it should be approached, you know, with a lot of knowledge in advance, you know, so much so that a lot of people don't even have that knowledge. It is accessible, but a lot of people don't have it, especially, you know, someone like myself who was a 14-year-old had no idea what cultural appropriation was. It was going in and just trying it out, you know. And the thing is, I would say cultural appropriation wasn't even a phenomenon back then, you know, at 14, I think I was even younger than that when I went. And the thing is, it goes both ways, by the way, you know, it's not mm-hmm. just me who's trying to do K-pop dances in the middle of Seoul and Itaewon. I'm just standing there doing K-pop dances, and everyone's just like, you know, laughing and clapping, like might as well, you know, this Middle Eastern girl singing a K-pop in the middle of nowhere before it was cool. But at the same time, you know, you would see like places masjids, you know, Arabic learning schools in Seoul in South Korea, where Koreans are so interested in that. They would come in and they would try taking pictures. Some of them would even wear, some of them would even try wearing a scarf or abaya or you know, or a shela or something, just to, you know, just to get into the vibe. And here it's like, where is the line? Is this cultural appropriation? Is this an issue of cultural appropriation, or is this okay? And where do you draw the line? And when? And as we progress, is this line becomes very gray, you know, as the years go by, this line becomes very gray. But back in the day, we were both just trying things, you know, like mm-hmm. all the Korean citizens, they were there trying shelas and trying abayas in front of their embassies and in front of the mosque and taking pictures. And I was dancing the K-pop in Itaewon. And everybody was
Oh, that's understood. got it. Moving more into your experience, have you had like a favorite or just an internship or a job that you've learned the most from?
Oh yeah. One of my favorite internships ever was in Bibliothèque Alexandrina, which is the Library of Alexandria. It's the oldest library in the world, and it's located in Alexandria, Egypt, my hometown. I love that place. It is an old library that was burned down ages ago, and then it was revived again in 2009, I believe. And I came in there, and I was like, I won't, you know, library English major, you know, might as well, you know, mm-hmm. perfect place to do an internship, don't you think?
Right.
You know, and here's the thing, what people don't tell you about Biblioteca Alexandrina is that, or the Library of Alexandria, is that it's not just about the books and it's not just about the research. It's also about the music and the art scene. Mm-hmm. The art scene there is spectacular and hosts some of the biggest concerts in Egypt that I feel very humbled, you know, to be part of, you know, this initiative. And I personally liked working in the public relations and the international affairs sector. And that's because I got to meet a lot of, funny enough, students from the United Arab Emirates, you know,
oh, wow.
would come and be like, oh, we're in Egypt for the summer. And I'll be like, come in, let me tell you all about this place, you know, and it was just spectacular. We get people from all over the world every single day, Italy, Japan, China, everywhere, Uganda, Sudan, you know, like Libya, we everywhere, you know, everywhere, and just places, every Kuwait, GC, just the whole GCC region, you know, and we just show them around the place, we show them the architecture, we show them just the richness of the books and the history of the place. And for me, that was such a spectacular experience. I've learned so much, and it really did emphasize what I've learned in the UAE, which was tolerance. I was able to practice that in the work field, especially in a field like PR in Biblioteca Alexandrina. Absolutely. It was like a place for that implementation.
Of course. That sounds really, really, really like amazing experience.
Cool. You should come visit sometime. And I'm in Alexandria right now.
Okay, no doubt.
Yeah, the library is like literally 5 minutes away from my place. You just let me know.
All right, for sure. Appointment. Without a doubt. Is that what you're up to now? Like what are you currently working on,
I've currently written a paper about language and gender display in the lyrics of hip hop music. Mm. And it's again bringing in the elements of music and language and looking at it from the lens of gender and how we display gender in a global perspective, especially that hip hop is again a global industry and English is again a global language. And so I was looking at that, and I, with the help of Professor Ji Young Chim, who was also Korean, fun fact, they all tie together, doesn't it?
Right. So,
it all ties together. And so we really worked together to put that paper out there, and we put it out in the UK in the University of Queen's University in the UK, and they asked us to come and present the paper, but because of the COVID situation, we weren't able to. They said they're postponing it until further notice, so we're waiting for that. And then we applied for the Undergraduate Global Awards, and we won regional winner for that paper, and I'm really happy and very humbled by such an experience. And right now we're trying to publish this paper in a journal article, so we're expanding on it, we're adding statistical analysis at the end of the paper, so we can publish it in a journal in a journal that is about language and gender and music, really, and gender and media, to be very precise. And then what I'm personally working on as an individual is this piece that it's a fictional piece that I want to present to this competition in the Emirates Festival of Literature coming up very soon, and deadline's coming up very, very soon in November. So I'm working really hard on that piece. You know, it's just a 1,500 word piece, but I'm very excited to share that with the competition of the Emirates Festival of Literature precisely, it's called the Oxford competition for the you know, the best short story that you can possibly produce. And I'm really I'm really excited about it. I'm very scared, but because I've never written fiction before. I've done a lot of literature courses, but I've never written fiction before. So it's going to be my first piece that is fiction and not really research.
Right. New frontiers, though.
It's a little out of my comfort zone, but I'm willing to try.
Right. Well, thank you so much for your time so far. Just to start wrapping up, would you, is there any like words of advice? I think you dropped a really good jewel about, you know, just like urging university students to just try, you know, things that they're interested in.
Yes. Try everything. And failure is inevitable. You know, the most successful people on the face of this planet fail every single day. Whether it's dropping a plate or dropping a spoon, that's failure. They do it again anyways, you know? And so, and it's just keeping at it, being persistent and resilient, you know, regardless of what people say. If you believe in yourself, I know this sounds corny, but honestly, this is the best thing best advice I'd give. If you honestly believe that this is your calling, then stick to it and fight for it. And just don't listen to anybody else. Just go for it. Once you found your calling. Yep.